Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 557, Science Faction Mud, Bloods, and Diabetes.
The first part of that sounded like some racial term from Europe. Or something, or from the Harry Potter universe, I believe. I believe Mudblood is what.
Yeah.
So we're starting this off with fantasy racism, Bobby. This is my podcast lane. Stay out of it, Bobby.
I mean, depending on how you view it, all racism is fantasy, right? Like, I mean, to some extent, it's all just a different J.R.R. Tolkien thing where you're imagining one person as the elves and one person as the dwarfs and whatnot.
No, Bobby. I hate culture. That's completely different. I hate very things that are real. I hate cultures that are different from my own because they frighten me and they elicit a fear response, which I interpret in anger.
Oh, and speaking of interpreting something in anger, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great, but it doesn't just come out as hate and fear. It also comes out as confused arousal. If you check my super confusing and contradictory porn searches, you will find that I get off a lot to white men being dominated by other races. And I'm not even a white guy, so I don't even know what that I mean, to all intents and purposes, I am a super white guy. But if my ancestors were claiming me, they would not claim me as a white guy. But that's just to boost their numbers, and they'd be lying.
There are few things I would imagine being a scarier or more intimidating task than searching through your porn history. That is the equivalent of, like, the guy on the police force who has to watch the snuff film in order to make sure it's actually a snuff film. Like, they're like, what about Bill? Get Bill. He's got ice water in his veins. He can do it. Like, that would be the person they have to get to look through your search history.
What if you, when you looked through my search history, what would your reaction be when you looked through it and it was just like hours upon hours of regular missionary sex?
Punctuated every once in a while by one that we don't even understand. Like, what is stuck bear porn? Like, what is that?
I would love it if that happened, but your first reaction would be, this is a fake hard drive. This is the hard drive we were meant to find. No. There's a real computer that he masturbated to. You always had to log so many fake masturbation hours on this computer in order for this to be a decoy to porn he didn't even enjoy. The real laptop's in this house somewhere. Tear down the walls.
Yeah, I would assume you do have some kind of decoy sitting around, because otherwise, if somebody found, like, the truth, it's the reason that you look at an eclipse through, like, a hole in a cardboard box is, like, you don't want to blind yourself, right? The same reason you would keep around the fake hard drive. You're like, if somebody finds this for their own good, I want them to see the decoy.
What if what you saw rocked your world and changed your outlook on life? Like, you just wanted to fuck, man. Like, it just...
Oh, dear.
This is a persona, Bobby. The real Damien is asexual, loves a good book more than anything. I just nailed this character.
I've talked about this before, is I met somebody who was asexual once, and then I had other people who recently in a group chat, they were talking, and they said, you know, I don't know if I like this whole idea that asexuals have just latched themselves on to LGBTQ, because, you know, those other groups, they have a lot of prejudices against them, and nobody really cares if you're asexual. Like, that's not going to be a thing. And I had to disagree, because I was like, listen, I'm all for the LGBTQ. I'm on board. And I try not to judge people based on their sexual preferences. But I met one guy who explained to me that he was asexual. He hadn't had sex in 7 years, and that was only because he was in a relationship with a girl who wanted to have sex. He doesn't masturbate. He did it just for her, but he didn't really like it or care for it and stuff. And, like, immediately, my immediate thought was like, I think I have to kill this guy. Like, because
I don't want to hire him as a page for this podcast.
He has such a significant advantage over me. Like, if it came down to warfare, there's no way I could win that battle, because I have to set aside a good, you know, 45 minutes to 3 hours a day for sexual needs or purposes or thoughts or confusions or distractions. And he is just without that. And, like, I was trying to think of how productive he must have been in his teens and 20s. Like, every single thought I had in my teens and 20s, if it wasn't about sex, it was like, maybe I can learn this complicated physics concept so later somebody, I can make enough money that somebody will have sex with me. But there, like, everything was derived to or from sex. And the idea that you would be removed from that and not have that as a driving force literally seems like a superpower.
God, can we just get the surgery to make you a robot so we could just strip you? I mean, like, So we could just strip you of all human experience whatsoever. Like, damn it, I'm tired of alcohol being having an effect on me. Why couldn't I just be more efficient with my time? Listen, Spock, okay, it's okay to sit down and enjoy shit. It's okay to sit down and pound one out to some weird shit you found on your Damien's laptop after he passed away from a David Carradine accident.
I was just trying to think of like how many PhDs I would have if I was asexual. I think like, at this point, if I didn't have the sexual distraction as a driving force, just how productive I would be.
See, like, here's the thing, Bobby. I know deep there are two parts of you. There's one part of you that sees your love of large, beautiful, big, beautiful women as a distraction. But another part of you sees it as art. And those two, there's two wolves inside you, Bobby. And it's very unhealthy. And that's also a sex thing.
Yeah, both of those wolves are rock hard. All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
You have to let them finish, Bobby. Their penis locks. You got to let them finish.
It absolutely locks. And that always seemed unfair to me. Like, there really is no revoking consent when it comes to dogs and wolves. Because once it gets going, that's no one's choice at that point.
Wolves could have evolved oral sex, or they could have evolved locking penises. Either were methods of securing a female lover from and preventing her from running away. Wolves went the dark route. And I don't like that.
Article number one, mudbloods and different types of Neanderthals.
God, you keep repeating that hate, Bobby.
So this is a very interesting paper in the journal Science that is interesting for a few reasons. We'll get into all of them. Some of them are kind of a callback to previous Science Faction episodes, but really, really interesting stuff in this. It's a fairly big story, but some of the reason it's interesting kind of flew under the radar. So the headline is basically multiple waves of genetically distinct Neanderthals swept through Europe, which is in itself very cool. And what that essentially means is we are seeing the population replacement of Neanderthals over time throughout European history. There was once one group, and then they got completely replaced by another group, seemingly without intermixing or interbreeding, et cetera, et cetera. We see that sometimes in Homo sapien history. We've talked about that with the incursions of Turkish groups into Europe, which then became what we now call Europeans.
Now you're turning into Tucker Carlson and replacement Inuit theory, people. Bobby. Jesus Christ, man. You're a racist, Bobby, is what I meant to say, but in like that Harry Potter voice. You're a racist,
but one
Bobby.
With a bow tie.
It looks spiffy. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Yeah. But we've talked about Neanderthals before. Very, very interesting. We know all non-African Homo sapiens do carry a significant amount of Neanderthal DNA in them because we interbred with them multiple times, we think. And depending on where you're from on Earth, you might carry more or less of that. They're very important to the human story for that reason. Also, just because they're this weird group that evolved, from a same ancestor that evolved in Africa that we did, but that ancestor went to Europe and it evolved into Neanderthals and Denisovans. And so they're this European, Eurasian group of hominids. And I always just... The story of Neanderthal is always so interesting to me because at some point, the first member of our species wandered into Eurasia and met the first member of their species to meet our species. Like, at some point, there was a meeting, and much like the Lord of the Rings that we were talking about, like, all of a sudden, you are looking at a elf or a dwarf, and you are a completely different species, and that must have been amazing. And as we talked about...
And this Neanderthal is stuck, and I need to help.
Soon after they fucked, as Damien insinuated right there, probably many, many, many times, and then gave rise to modern humans outside of Africa. So very, very interesting part, just Neanderthals in general, of the human story. Also a very weird group in a lot of ways. They technically had bigger brains than we did, but a less sophisticated tool culture and very tiny populations and just very, very interesting all around. So what they found was in looking at the genetic evidence, there was actually two complete replacements of Neanderthals in Europe. The first original Neanderthal group was completely replaced by a genetically distinct group around 135,000 years ago. So they probably came in from Central Asia, moved their way in and replaced those in Europe. And then it happened again 100,000 years ago, where another genetically distinct group came in and completely replaced it. That's really interesting. It's significant because while we talked about that has happened in human history before, it's not common. Most of the time there's interbreeding and, you know, maybe there's more of a prevalence of certain genes within a certain population, but the groups kind of mix together. This is a complete replacement model. It doesn't mean that they came in and murdered the previous Neanderthals. The Neanderthal other ones could have died out.
Homo sapiens are probably just packing meat. You know what I'm talking about?
No. These are different groups of Neanderthals replacing one another.
One group of Neanderthals was just packing meat.
Yeah, well, it could be. We know somewhere around this time that we were interbreeding. Not only were they interbreeding into our genetic lineage, we were interbreeding into theirs.
Yeah, we were.
And so it could very well be that, you know, and we know that the human Y chromosome did actually replace the Neanderthal Y chromosome. So it could be that basically our genes got into one population and gave them a genetically distinct advantage over previous generations. It could be that it had to do with climate change. There were times of great climate change in this era as ice ages kind of waned and waxed and stuff. So it could be that one group just figured out how to survive cold better. And so they took over because they were better able to do so. It could be that one was just dominant in battle or subterfuge or something and was able to replace
sexual prowess.
Yeah, the aforementioned oral sex is what set them apart. That was their genetic advantage.
Yeah, we were dirty because let me just tell you, Neanderthal crotch, I don't care what gender you are, was dirty. And
yes.
You gotta go down there. And but human crotch, I'm not giving them a pass either.
No.
Yeah, when do you think oral sex became a thing? It wasn't just something like deviants did. Like, in all, like was it after sanitation? Like, historically?
1967. Like, it wasn't that long ago. But I do like the idea that one Neanderthal deviant was really what changed it. Like, the genetic advantage was there was one Neanderthal that was sporting, like, a Gene Simmons tongue. He worked his way into the female Neanderthal groups of the previous groups, and they were all like, sorry, guys, we're going with this guy.
Or it was just one dominant Neanderthal. They say he'll suck your man parts dry, he will. Like, oh my God, this deviant.
Oh, wow. He took a different route, huh? He's not so much going to shoot at you as much as he is going to empty the clips of the other army to keep them from being able to shoot.
Well, you're telling me there's some sick bastard out there that put their thing and their torture in his mouth? I got mushrooms growing off the scrotes.
Accurate. So, again, it is kind of surprising. We don't necessarily see complete replacement models often in Homo sapien history, though it does happen. And more interestingly, is an entire area this size having been done twice in about the span of 35,000 years, complete genetic replacement. Very, very interesting.
The Night Sucker. I can't believe I didn't give him a name.
He sneaks into the cave at night, unloads your rifle, so to speak, sneaks out.
Listen, it might sound crazy, but it wasn't half bad. I mean, for him, it must have been wrong, terrible. But for me, not that I'm gay enough.
Oh, dear. Now, that is the kind of headline of the story. Very, very interesting in and of itself. However, to me, the more interesting part is basically a long-term follow-up to something we reported a long time ago. And I told you, watch this space. We are going to see major discoveries because of this thing that I am reporting on now. And this was a few years ago. This is going to change what we know about human genetics, human history, human paleontology. And it did. This is one of many studies that are coming out, many, 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 many more to come that are going to be examples of that. And that is how they got this DNA. Because they did not test the bones
Night
of
sucker.
Neanderthals. They did not test the bones of Neanderthals. They didn't test the teeth of Neanderthals. They didn't find Neanderthal hair or even coprolites. This was them taking DNA from the dirt, literally the soil of the caves Neanderthal lived in, including the Denisovan cave, by the way, because remember there were Neanderthals in there at certain points. They took some soil from there. We talked about this technology a few years ago when it first came out, where they were basically saying, look, we can sequence DNA from the dirt inside caves because there are people living and sweating and pooping and peeing and shedding skin cells and hair cells and bleeding.
Do it outside the cave, Greg.
Come on.
Oh my God. I know, the Night Sucker is outside. If I go outside, he will get me.
Wait, why is Grack always outside now?
Hello? Just passed out on this
I'm
rock.
I'm sleeping. I like how he's Cookie Monster for some reason.
We evolved from a similar species.
So I told you, watch this space. We're going to see a whole bunch of more stuff, and we are already. Now, this particular study was particularly interesting because they didn't just find mitochondrial DNA, actually nuclear DNA. I believe this was the first time they found ancient human nuclear DNA from the dirt. It's much easier to find mitochondrial DNA, many, many, many more copies of mitochondrial DNA in every cell as opposed to a single copy of nuclear DNA. But very interesting, because it allows us to compare much more exactly the relationship between two creatures as opposed to just mtDNA.
Okay, real serious question.
Uh-huh.
Do they have the same amount of chromosomes as us? Is that why?
Yes.
Okay, they did. Okay, so pairing was more likely. I thought it was like maybe like more like the way a horse or the way a mule can breed. You know, like usually you can fuck a mule all day and not have to worry about it. But one out of every 1,000 times.
Yeah.
You get a pregnant mule at your door.
Every once in a while, you're taking that hard trip to mule Planned Parenthood.
I'm not having more centaur children.
So the reason that this is such a big deal, you might be like, well, okay, you can take it from dirt. That's kind of cool, I guess. No, you don't understand. We have very few actual remains in terms of bones, in terms of teeth, in terms of things you can pull DNA from. We have tons of sites, though, tons of areas with this pacted dirt, which means we could start pulling DNA from almost every one of our Neanderthal sites and start comparing it, which is what they were able to do here. It's how they were able to get this narrow window of 100 to 135,000 years and beyond and before and stuff like that, because they were able to look at not just bones, but look at the dirt itself. This is going to change what we know about human history, probably as much as DNA itself ever did, because we're going to be able to tell the movements not only of Neanderthals and Denisovans, but of Homo sapiens across the world. We're going to be able to trace every strand of human being that we can find archaeological sites for, whereas before we could only do it for places where we could find, you know, human remains. We'll be able to tell where individual groups that populated Ireland and then, you know, came out of Turkey and came from blah, blah, blah. We'll be able to trace this back through history, including a lot of the dead ends that are no longer around. We will be able to basically tell the total story of human history, of hominid history, using this technology. And this is a very seminal paper, a very important one, because it shows the use of this for nuclear DNA, which will be a huge part of that. And when we see this evolve, like our children's future textbooks will be written using this technology. And unless you are somebody who got a preprint journal, because I actually reported on this from a preprint journal, and you listen to this, you heard about it here first. Because we reported on this as one of our main stories when this technology first came out, and its potential to radically change genetics, human paleontology, the history of humanity. So this is like one of our many follow-ups, as we will continue to have more stories come out about this, where I say, look, remember when I told you it was going to change the world? It is changing the world.
I'm picturing like 200 years from now, there's a high school classroom. A data-like Professor Android stands in front of the class. Children, please open your holographic textbooks to page 37. Our early ancestors lived in fear of the Night Sucker.
I mean, if you like extrapolate this far enough back, we will be seeing, you know, not only when the humans first came out of Africa, which we kind of know, but we can narrow that down. We know there were groups of humans that left, Homo sapiens that left Africa that don't have living descendants because, you know, they were a dead end. We could narrow that down. We can narrow down the first time the Homo sapiens that then led to everybody else left Africa. We could narrow down successive waves. We can really change what we know about the history of our species down to the point where individual archaeological sites will be able to be traced back to lineages of human beings, both ones that existed way far into the past and then their modern day descendants. It is unbelievably cool, and this technology will be something that, again, similar to the telescope being what modern day, you know, astronomy books and stuff are based on, this will be what we base much of our ancient genetic knowledge on, not direct comparisons of bones and teeth and whatnot that is much more rare.
We're about to find out if a lot of white people are lying about their Native American heritage. No, but really, Bobby, exactly. We've talked about ghost species and hidden hominids that we don't know anything about. Does that mean that soon we could be naming the next Denny Bear could be around the corner on Science Faction?
But except the Denny Bear, we didn't have too much. We just had a pinky bone that we got DNA from. That was for a long time, the only remains we had of any Denisovans. And still to this day, some of the few remains we have of them. But the next species could be named, like you're saying, without even a bone. It could just be named off the dirt from a specific archaeological site, which is super fucking cool. And I would comment that our knowledge of, as we've talked about before, one of my favorite topics, the human genetic isopoint, means that technically I think every white person does have Native American ancestry.
It hasn't been 1,000 years yet. We've only...
No, the way it works is if you go back past the human genetic isopoint, which is, we think, like 5,000 years at max.
Ah, okay. There you go.
Every person who is alive before that time that currently has living descendants is related to all humans on Earth. And so technically, you and I share a ton of Native American ancestors who are basically every Native American who was running around North or South America before about 5,000 years ago is our direct ancestors.
Well, I know they do with me because I'm a mestizo, a person of the New World. I roll my R's with pride, Bobby. Except in that sentence.
You know what? Please, let me hear you roll your R's.
I roll my R's like proud Russian men.
All right, on article number 2, 12 minutes a week can reverse diabetes.
Listen, I got diabetes because I was unable to commit 12 seconds a week to fitness. So,
wouldn't it be great if we did do a trial where one of us tried to beat diabetes in 12 minutes a week and the other tried to attain diabetes in 12 minutes a week? But the rule was the rest of your life had to be relatively healthy, like just like normal, but you had 12 minutes a week to like shotgun Cadbury cream eggs filled with pixie sticks and see if you couldn't make it happen.
You'd have to do it in IV. Like there's no way you could do
it. No, I'm not allowing no blood work. Just all in this.
Fine,
this
I'm soaking
all...
a tampon in sugar, yeah. in fucking, I'm soaking a tampon in corn syrup.
In Faygo, yeah.
Mountain Dew.
Yeah, all right, well, fair enough. So that's a little bit exaggeratory, and I'll get into what this study shows, but it's really interesting. It's about something else we've covered before, which is high-intensity interval training. So, Damien, do you know what high-intensity interval training, or HIIT, is?
It sounds like just short, intense workouts.
Yeah. It's short and intense workouts, and you have like kind of cool down periods in between. So, you know, your workout might be, let's say if it's 25 minutes, there might be 15 minutes of actual working out in there. And then there's, you know, little breaks in between of kind of cool downs. You're not completely stopped, but you're not really working out during those periods. But the idea is that...
Approaching ladies in the gym, asking them if they know how to work out. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, bro. Hey, Olympic lifter, do you need a man to show you how to bench, bro? I mean, not bro.
No, so the high intensity part is the idea that you're doing something that is very, very strenuous. So instead of like jogging for, let's say somebody goes in there, let's say they're really healthy and they go jogging 50 minutes three times a week, right? That's a pretty healthy person. But for most of that jogging period, your body is not working particularly hard. Maybe when you go up a hill or something, and yeah, jogging's difficult, but it's not that hard. And also, your body tends to get very good at activities it does over and over again, and therefore, it kind of learns to coast. And so that jogging, you know, 50 minutes a week only does so much. The idea of high-intensity interval training is you're doing something that is really pressing you. Now, the first big popular thing to utilize this concept was CrossFit. That uses high-intensity interval training. They do a lot of lifts and quick movements and stuff and really exhaust yourself, and then you kind of slow down, and then you do it again, and then you slow down. But it is by no means the only way. There are many, many others that don't even use weights, and you know, you
fight
can
for
do
your
you
life
can...
for 3 minutes.
Yeah, like, that would
like
be what
I throw a bobcat at you, Bobby, and you just mm-hmm. you got to get it going. You got to get it, save
there's
your
a,
life.
There's a video going around the internet right now of a dad who fought a bobcat. Like they were going into the car mm-hmm. and a bobcat attacked his wife in the driveway. And he fought the shit out of that bobcat.
Dude, he did a WWE fucking slam on that bobcat. And
well, he threw it. But my favorite part is the bobcat came back to the same place. You'd think it would run the other way, but it seemed it wanted more.
I think it was running back under the car.
Yeah, but I mean, still, you'd think it'd run the other way to another neighbor's house or
it
something.
It was going back to a human it could be, it had a proven record against. It was going back after the wife.
It wanted the best 2 out of 3.
Go watch that video, everybody. Otherwise, that whole fucking joke is lost.
So this study looked at the ability of high-intensity interval training 3 times a week for 12 weeks to improve things like blood sugar and stuff, especially in people with diabetes. And so they found that 4 minutes of high-intensity interval training 3 times a week. Now, I want to preface this. There's actually a few studies involved in this. There's one that looked at its direct effect on sugars and stuff. That was, I believe, 15 minutes each. And I think that was 2 times a week. This was a previous study that looked at 4 minutes, 3 times a week. And that's 4 minutes of the actual high intensity part. That might be spaced in a 12 minute a day workout or something. Like I said, not the entire workout is the high intensity part. But this very tiny amount of exercise, time-wise, very, very tiny amount of exercise can significantly improve blood sugar levels, fat in the liver, and cardiorespiratory fitness in adults with type 2 diabetes. That is fucking awesome, because we've talked before about what a huge deal type 2 diabetes is to our healthcare system. It's a cause of mortality that people totally underestimate. Like, it's a way bigger cause of death in the United States than you would think. It's also a way bigger comorbidity factor with other things like heart disease. It leads to people getting their feet chopped off, their toes chopped off. That leads to them dying. And
yeah,
then
which
even
you
if
lose
don't.
Weight when that happens, and the problem fixes itself, Bobby.
So it's a big deal. Stopping type 2 diabetes is a huge deal. My favorite study, the one we covered, is that a lot, I think it was like 65% of type 2 diabetes cases could be at least temporarily reversed if somebody fasted for 3 days. And I was like, could you imagine being 3 days away from not having type 2 diabetes and then like choosing not to do it?
I didn't choose not to do it. Somebody chose to drive by McDonald's, okay? And it was me on my way to work at McDonald's.
But, I mean, to be fair, fasting for 3 days is difficult. I fasted for 3 days. It sucks. That really sucks. It's hard to do. If you're saying, though, that, you know, working out 15, 20 minutes a day, 3 times a week, and out of that 15, 20 minutes, you're only working hard 4 to 10 minutes out of that thing. So 4 to 10 minutes of hard working out 3 times a week. And you could significantly reduce that, sometimes get out of diabetes status just by doing that. That's amazing. That is not hard. That is something that you could pitch to almost anybody as a very feasible option to do.
When I was growing up, we knew a lot of fat kids. And Bobby, you were a bigger kid, but tell you what.
Very big.
You were a kid who had trouble like running the mile.
Yes.
If I had told you, keep in mind, you haven't developed type 2 diabetes as far as I know. I don't know that you're ever in any danger of it. But if
I
told that Bobby of that era about this high intensity workout training, do you think you would gravitate towards it? And do you think you'd be able to do it?
Yeah. I mean, I think absolutely. That sounds way better than the alternative, which is what you get told, which is usually like, okay, you know, you're going to be in the gym for an hour plus a day if you really want this to work. You know, it's one thing if you're overweight. I was certainly overweight. But it's another thing if you are literally you have a medical condition that threatens your life. Like, man, if you don't have a needle around, you could die if you have type 2 diabetes and your blood sugar gets out of control. That's a fucking different ballgame. You can lose your feet, you can lose your limbs, you can have damage to your organs. Like, type 2 diabetes is a serious disease. And the idea that you could get out of that disease with literally a couple of minutes of exercise 3 times a day, that is a game-changing idea. In fact, it equated that those 3 times a week of that high-intensity interval training that was literally like 10 minutes of exercise each, that equated to about 45 minutes of moderate-intensity aerobic exercise. That's what I was talking about before. So it's the equivalent of going jogging for close to an hour. And if you tell me, let's go jogging for the next 45 minutes, if you made me do it, I've been in times in my life where I've had to, fine, I guess I have to. I'm not excited about it. But if you told me, okay, let's go work out for the next 6 minutes, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I can do that. That's very doable.
Okay, Bobby, what about how much electrical current would I have to run through my muscles to get the same amount of workout, but not have to go through all that cardio?
To be fair, if you run enough electrical current through your body, you will cure both your type 2 diabetes and the problem you have of breathing. Like, everything will be done.
Oh my God, my asthma could be gone too? All right, Bobby, I'm gonna go hit the breakers real fast.
Yes.
Be right back.
Absolutely.
The signal might cut out.
All of that will be a thing of the past. Now, I want to also put this in there that literally any exercise helps stave off diabetes, especially with people who are on the bridge or are in type 2 diabetes and heart disease as well. So to any degree, like even if you're like, fuck, I don't even want to do the high intensity interval training. If you can do anything, do it. If you can walk to the end of the block, go do it. If you have diabetes, that is a life-threatening illness. You can keep it under control with diet and exercise, and any exercise is exercise. It counts. Obviously, better to do more to some extent. I mean, obviously, there's some cutoff of there, but like for the most part, it's better to do more. But anything you can do helps. So if you can walk 3 blocks, go walk 3 blocks and come back. And then maybe next week you can walk 5 blocks and, you know, and bump that up. But this high intensity interval training is so promising in my mind because it has the ability to tell people, look, it's like that Kimmy Schmidt line. You can do anything for 10 seconds, right? Like, you can do this for 10 seconds. You can do this for 10 more seconds. You can do this for a few minutes. It will be tiring, and then you will be done in the time that this TV commercial break takes. And then you can, you know, get on with your healthy life. And so just having these types of things that don't seem like such daunting tasks to me seem like really important discoveries. And also, by the way, I don't know if you guys have heard about it. I didn't hear about this anywhere except in the actual scientific literature. So it's, again, one of those very important studies that I think didn't get nearly enough publication.
I can fight John Bones Jones for 10 seconds.
You could try, certainly.
No, Bobby, you said I could do anything for 10 seconds.
Okay, yeah, you could. I mean, like, listen, you...
Stay conscious for 10 seconds.
There's very few, there's only like a handful of KOs in the UFC that are under 10 seconds. So, like, technically, if the bell rings and you just kind of scurry around the ring, you'll last 10 seconds.
Or I try to get in the record books and lean into it. Move over, Ben Askren. Damian Mercado is coming through.
That's
for a very specific Venn diagram of fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, very, very interesting. Damian, you and I, just side note, guys, for the fans out there, Damian and I are getting in better shape. I got tired of not having something to compete in, and I don't want to get punched in the head anymore, so I'm not going back to boxing. So Damian and I, we're going to take up Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so we'll be getting in shape ourselves. We should do like a group thing where a bunch of Science Faction people do it with us, Damian.
Yeah, and we'll have an international Science Faction BJJ tournament at the end of the year. We'll fly everybody out to Sydney.
That seems like an interesting spot.
We'll have it in the Opera House. It'll be unlike, COVID restrictions might still be in place. So
yeah. Well, I should comment that both Damian and I are fully vaccinated. We wouldn't be doing it if we're not, but we're going to be getting into it. So, hey, by the way, if this inspires you and you decide you want to, you know, go out and do something like that, let us know on our Facebook page. Be like, hey, I'm going to go start punching horses again and getting back to life because you guys inspired me to get active and back in the world out now that COVID is fading out.
Don't be inspired by this, guys. Don't listen to what he's saying. Don't be inspired. We're just doing this to get on Rogan.
Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 557, where you learned all about Neanderthal DNA in the dirt and how 12 minutes a week can reverse diabetes. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back next week for Science Faction 558.
Damian, come closer.
Yes, father?
It's time for me to tell you that you must replace me as I did with my father, as the Night Sucker.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.